Well, hello everyone. It's been a while since Charlie Kirk was tragically assassinated now, just about 10, 11 days. And since then, all sorts of theories have been doing the rounds. And I have held off making this video. I didn't want to make it, partly because it's taken an awful lot of work, an awful lot of watching sort of content I don't usually watch, because so many questions were unanswered. I frankly didn't know what to believe. I had people screaming at me from one direction, "Oh, don't look at that." I had other people screaming at me from another direction, "How can you possibly believe this, that, and the other?" And generally, when people are screaming at me one way or the other, me, not being a socially driven person, being someone who likes to find out things for myself, thought, well, I'm going to have to just sit down and see all the arguments that are out there and map them out and then make an assessment of them. And I'm going to do that in this video. I'm going to go through all of the stuff that is out there. There are, as far as I can tell, 5 broad positions. There are about 13 major theories out there, or major question marks out there. I'll go through every single one of them, even if it takes an hour. I'm going to go through these two related but actually mutually exclusive questions, which are: do we believe the FBI story? And secondly, was it Israel? Those are the two questions that keep on hovering. Of course, if the FBI story is not true, that does not automatically point to Israel. It's also possible that everything went down exactly as the FBI said, and it was still Israel, of course. So these two, what I'm saying is, you know, foundations of logic people, these two questions, even though they seem like they overlap, don't necessarily point to each other. There's nothing logical to say that just because the FBI story is true, therefore it wasn't Israel. Or if the FBI story isn't true, that doesn't automatically point to Israel either. I'll look through all of this in the course of this video. And trust me, I didn't want to make it. I didn't want to watch hours upon hours of Candice Owens. Trust me, I didn't. But now I've done it, I'm going to share with you what I found. Before we get going, promo code Shredder gets you 25% off all courses. I'm going to play this small ad, and then when I come back, we're going to look at all of this. But if you want to know how to do research, how to think through things logically, how to analyze arguments for yourself, how to study evidence, all of things I've had to do for this video, you can buy the Trivium and do it today. I'll be back soon. It's promo code Shredder. World-class education denied to you by school, denied to you by woke university. Well, no more. Pick up your course today. 25% off all courses with promo code Shredder. That's Shredder. Buy it now. All right, so this is a big, messy and complex story with many, many different moving parts, as you can see from this diagram here, and lots of people with lots of different narratives, and two big, not necessarily related questions at the heart of it. Before I begin, I should mention I'm going to put a few things out of scope here, because we're dealing with what I call the school of schizo, the world of conspiracy theory. It's something that me, in the history of this channel, in the history of just myself as a person, I don't touch. I did make a video called The Schools of the Right once upon a time, where I did recognize the school of schizo as a school of the right. But I said that me as a realist, me as a staunch realist, I get a -2 casting because it's my opposition school. If you so go back and watch that, I'm not good at the conspiracy stuff. It kind of rubs me up the wrong way. A lot of it does. And because of that, there's a couple of things I'm going to put out of scope, things I'm not going to consider. Okay. First, the whole business of the Charlie Kirk Memorial. Now, I honestly thought that was in appalling taste. It was just, you know, I mean, I love WWE, as everybody knows, but a funeral, a memorial service, it just seemed in appalling taste to me, with the pyrotechnics and Erica Kirk coming out. It was an awfully tawdry affair, which I thought, you know, I don't know, maybe call it cultural differences, or, you know, my British sensibilities or whatever. I thought it was an appalling display, a terrible spectacle, which, you know, was just surreal to watch play out across my timeline. But there was a lot of stuff that came out of that. Like, for example, you know, what's the symbol that this person's making? What's that Kabbalah ring or whatever? I don't want to get into any of that stuff. Esoteric symbols, you know, is Erica Kirk a member of some Masonic lodge? Body language, ghost, is she crying? I'm not going to touch any of that stuff at all. But all of that stuff is doing the rounds. And, you know, when you start going down these rabbit holes, it gets weirder and weirder and weirder. I'm not touching any of that, okay? I will note, however, I thought it was in bad taste. Opinions vary, okay? The second thing that I am not going to get into is anything speculative that is not directly related to the... Because, again... there's a lot of he said, she said, and so on. And I want to just go on exactly everything connected to this, okay? So it's limiting the scope a little bit to three broad areas. Logistics, okay? Stuff around Tyler Robinson and stuff around Charlie Kirk that are directly related to this incident, okay? Now, before I get going, like I said, this is complex. I have to talk about five broad meta-narratives that prefigure, that is, core assumptions and political aims that prefigure what anyone says about this case, okay? And I've identified five main ones, okay? The first one is the MAGA frame, okay? MAGA, they want justice, they want revenge on their political enemies, Jimmy Kimmel, whoever else, right? They want to say, this was a hateful leftist. It was Trantifa, okay? A trans-loving Antifa, exactly as the FBI said. And we must use this political moment to crush our enemies, okay? So there's a political motivation and justification for them wanting to believe the FBI story. So MAGA have motive to believe the FBI story, okay? Second version, the second grand meta-narrative, you could say, if you want to get postmodern about it all, is the Zionist frame. Their narrative is something like, Charlie loved Israel. What, isn't it terrible? His fight is our fight. If you want to be on the side of righteousness, like Charlie, right, you should believe the things that Charlie believed, like supporting Israel, for example, yada, 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 okay? So you can see that they also, like MAGA, have some motivation. The Zionist lot have a motivation to believe the FBI story. Now, that there are still more frames outside of this. Third is the conspiracy frame. This is your David Icke's, your Gareth Icke, your Alex Jones to some extent, although he overlaps with some of these others too. But... the basic conspiracy frame of Ian Carroll is somebody I watch quite a few videos of. He's broadly in this area, I would say. The idea is they're pushing civil war. They want to divide and conquer. They don't want left and right united against the elites. They want to push a civil war narrative. And this neatly gets everybody back on the reservation of red versus blue. The basic David Icke frame, okay? That's a conspiracy frame. Now, I will say that people in this conspiracy frame, yes, they're motivated not to believe the FBI narrative, but also people in the conspiracy frame have a habit of not believing any narratives at all. And if you keep on going down that rabbit hole, let's call it the seven dimensions of James Dellingpole, okay? You get up to a point where nothing that happens at all is ever real. Everybody is an actor. Nothing ever happens. Like, literally nothing happens. So if you keep on going down the capital C conspiracy route, okay, you do actually get people who think Charlie Kirk was an actor, think that this incident didn't even happen and things like that, okay? I'm not touching the ones that far down the rabbit hole. I am going to deal with Ian Carroll in particular, because he was one of the people whose videos I watched quite a few of, because he kind of aggregated a lot of the other conspiracies out there, okay? Ian Carroll. Now, in this one here, the anti-Zionist, broadly speaking, here you've got Candy Sowins, for better or for worse. I'll talk more about her in a second. You've got various other people. The chief one I would put in here, probably, like, if I was going to use Ian Carroll for the conspiracy one, I'm going to say in the anti-Zionist camp, Max Blumenthal is probably the chief pusher of this basic idea that I've seen. And the idea here is that Charlie turned on Israel. Israel needs Turning Point USA to win back the Zoomers at this moment where they're desperate, where most of the country's turned against them. All they've got now is evangelical Christians, old boomers and so on. Basically the exact crowd that Charlie Kirk was designed to talk to. So that's a really important political base of operations to push Zionism in America. And because Charlie was turning on them, that's why he needed to be taken out, because they need to take over TPUSA. Something like this is the kind of Max Blumenthal theory. And then against that, we've got Nick Fuentes, and I put here etc., because I would say a large number of people on the so-called dissident right, people who are not particular fans of Israel, people who aren't fans even of the people who live in Israel in general, left or right, like Fuentes. Basically, their argument is all of this is a crock of shit. The conspiracy stuff and the anti-Zionist stuff, it's all a crock of shit, basically, because low IQ anti-Semitism discredits critiques of Zionism. And this stuff, Candace Owens and whatnot, is thrown into the mix, basically, to muddy the waters. And not everything that happens ever in history is a result of Israel. They're not the sole actors in history. And all of this stuff, all of this mess here, not believing the official narrative, coming up with conspiracy theories, actually blackens the name of anti-Zionism, discredits anti-Zionism. So there's no point doing all of this when the main fight really is to take the fight against Zionism, something like this, okay? This is something like Nick Fuentes' argument. I've seen Ryan Dawson pretty much, the video of his I saw seemed to come down on this line. I've got a buddy Endeavor who seems to be on this kind of line. Lots of people I know are on this line here, okay? And me, I don't know what to think, honestly. I don't know what to think, and that's why I'm making this video. That's why I decided to investigate for myself, because when people are screaming at me this way and that, the only way to figure out is to watch the stuff yourself, okay? Last thing I'll say before I get going on each of these, and I know I've been 14 minutes here, but this is a big topic, like I said, so it requires some setting up. Last thing I'll say is that before I embarked on this little journey, I was not aware of just how big Candace Owens is, right? Candace Owens is not somebody, like, in my mind, she was just like, oh yeah, she was that one who did the, the race stuff, and then she turned over to the right, and then she worked for Daily Wire, and then she turned on Israel, right? Something like this. Like, to me, I don't really watch Candace Owens. She's not really on my radar. I'm just aware of her in the background, right? What I was not aware of is just how big she is. She is bigger on YouTube than Tucker Carlson, that are way bigger than Ben Shapiro, bigger in terms of views, not in terms of subscribers, but in terms of views, than even Joe Rogan on YouTube. Like, some of these videos that I watch had 8 million, 9 million, 10 million views in a couple of days, right? Her last video that was on last night, her last stream, had something like 200,000 viewers live, right? So Candice Owens basically is mainstream, right? She is basically, as far as I can tell, the biggest podcaster in the world, or the biggest YouTuber, the biggest political YouTuber in the world. We can say that, okay? More people are watching Candice Owens than are watching Jimmy Kimmel, as one example, right? So she can't really be ignored, because when Candice Owens says something, 8 million people listen to her, right? So she is a significant voice here, and she can't be ignored, okay? And remember, throughout all of this, there are two questions that people have posited. Do we believe the FBI story, and was it Israel? I'm going to deal with the first question first, the FBI story, okay? And as per this, there are basically 13 different questions in three broad buckets. The logistics, which Ian Carroll in particular, in tedious and autistic detail. I mean, one of the things I've spent the past day, the past 2 days even, doing is watching. I mean, there's this whole genre of big, burly American guys who love guns, right? Who is like, ballistics are my thing, you know? And they, you know, there are people demonstrating how to, you know, how to use this Mauser that's apparently from World War One or something, how it's done, how it's assembled, how it's disassembled, you know, what happens if you shoot a breeze block. I've seen all of these, every single one of these videos, I've watched them, okay? I've literally watched dozens upon dozens of videos of big, burly American men who love guns, okay? I'm a real expert. There's so much of it. There's so much of this stuff. And the first thing I quickly learned is that all these people claiming to be experts on guns don't actually agree on the fundamentals of this question, which puts me in a bit of a difficult position as somebody who's never even touched a gun. I'm a lover, guys, okay? I've never even touched one. So all I've got to do is watch all of these people who claim to be experts telling me about, you know, shot trajectories and scopes and how they're assembled, how quickly they can be assembled, and if you can shove one down your leg, and so on and so forth. So what are some of the questions around the ballistics, okay? And this gets us into, very quickly, Ian Carroll's favourite topic, which is the question of assembly and disassembly. How did Tyler Robinson get onto the roof and off of the roof with a big World War One German rifle on him, okay? And also, what was, if he really was shot with that rifle, is the wound that we see an entry wound or an exit wound? So let's deal with, and what I'm going to do in this video, which I should have said, is I'm going to try to steel man the FBI position. I'm going to try to give the FBI the greatest benefit of the doubt by trying to come up with the most logical explanation for what it is that we see and all of these questions that we have, okay? So Ian Carroll is very caught up on the business of the camera on the roof, the camera that can see the shot of Charlie, and it can see Tyler Robinson running across the roof and then jumping off and then off into the woods.
No attention to the fact that we now know that the FBI has footage of the shooter taking the shot, and they specifically cut the video they released to start just after that part. Obviously, not because he never took the shot, probably never even had the rifle on the roof, but because of redacted. Pay no attention to the old man actively causing a distraction to help the shooter escape, or to the more than 10 strange flying objects that have been located in the cell phone footage, or to the fact that the wound doesn't match the shot, or to the fact that we are being shown a fabricated text message chain, or to the new photo that surfaced of Bro stopping by Dairy Queen for a little blizzy while he's the subject of a statewide manhunt. Trust the FBI to get to the bottom of it, just like they did with the Epstein files.
Okay. And what Ian Carroll is very, very concerned about is three things, really. One, why did the FBI cut off that footage of the actual shot itself? So he's very caught up on the fact that we don't see Tyler Robinson shoot Charlie Kirk from the security camera, because even though they've got the footage, they chose to clip it that 3 seconds out, and they only show him running away and jumping down, presumably with the rifle wrapped in a towel, off into the woods, okay? The other thing is that Kash Patel told us that there was a screwdriver left on the roof. And Ian Carroll is really hinges in on this detail. He spends a lot of time, I'm talking like 30 minutes, going in really minute detail on this screwdriver and whether this screwdriver was used to assemble the rifle and zero the scope and then disassemble the rifle so that he could get it into his rucksack and jump off the roof. And this has led to lots of debate, because if then he disassembled the rifle and left the screwdriver on the roof and then ran into the woods, as per the FBI's report, and apparently he was in the woods when he sent the text to the Troon boyfriend, okay, from the woods, and then they found the rifle in the woods, reassembled. Did he have a second screwdriver to reassemble the rifle, or did he run off the roof with the rifle still assembled, i.e. he didn't disassemble it, in which case, how did he jump from the roof with a massive Mauser wrapped in a towel? You can't really see it on the security footage. And if he'd stuck it down his leg, then wouldn't he have broken his leg, you know, if it was trapped down there? These are the sorts of questions that Ian Carroll fixates on. What irritates me about a lot of conspiracy stuff is that it always, always, always comes down to trying to study very blurry footage, okay? So there is, on the footage, there is a little kind of black blob. And Ian Carroll says, well, look, that has to be a rifle. If it's not a rifle, the whole FBI case falls down.
48 p.m. He's got something in his hand. And the big question is he carrying a rifle right now? Is this shape that he's putting down as he clambers over the edge, is that a Mauser hunting rifle? Listen, I'm not the gun expert. I am not the gun guy. That is not a rifle. And a lot of the gun guys, as far as I can tell, all the gun guys agree. That is not a rifle. And as he climbs over and jumps down, you can tell that the rifle's not down his pants, because he would have just split his jeans completely in half as he landed.
Other people have argued that actually he could have stuck it down his leg. Ian Carroll argues that if he jumped off the building, the impact of the fall of the jump when he bends his knees, the rifle would have torn his jeans. So that's the tall and short of that. Now, I've seen a lot of people try to come up with various different explanations, and it strikes me that I've seen a demonstration of somebody putting one of those rifles, one of those Mausers, down their leg. And I've seen somebody assemble it in 50 seconds. Some people argue that the scope could have been zeroed already, and that there was a way of fixing it quite easily. Other people argue that maybe it wasn't zeroed properly, and that's why he hit the neck rather than the head. I mean, let's say you were trying to hit somebody square there and you missed, or you maybe you'd hit them in the neck or something like that. So there, the point is, here, you can basically argue it either way, right? You can argue it either way. Ian Carroll's taking like a maximal, like, oh, well, we can't see the rifle, therefore there's no proof that there's any rifle there. Also, like, he left, you know, Kash Patel said there were DNA evidence on the screwdriver. So, you know, how did he reassemble it in the forest? Something like this. The thing is, all of that can be explained away, right? It can be explained away just by saying, well, okay, well, maybe those jeans were really hard, so they wouldn't rip, something like that. You can have some pretty hardy material. Maybe he took the scope off and put the scope in his rucksack. I don't know. I mean, there's so many different possibilities when it comes to this. Maybe he was actually carrying a rifle wrapped in a towel, and that the blurry footage that he's pointing to, that black blob, is a rifle. Maybe. Ian Carroll is incredulous that when Robinson is walking like across the park there just after this shooting to the woods, that nobody's suspicious, nobody goes over to him. But the fact is, like, people, you see people all the time carrying, like, if you saw someone carrying something, so what? You know, like, he's not automatically, like, people aren't always, automatically looking for something dodgy, even in a situation like that. Even in a situation like that, where there's been that gunshot, I can very easily imagine Robinson walking with, you know, this thing wrapped in a towel and nobody really batting an eyelid. So it's not that, I mean, the trouble is, a lot of Ian Carroll's stuff here relies on incredulity, when it could, I mean, there's a way in which it's true, right? There's a way in which you can explain it, all of his questions away, when it comes to this business of assembly, disassembly, screwdriver, etc. I should mention as well, one of the first questions of ballistics is the extent to which this shot could be made, right? And how much training would you need to make that shot? I did a bit of trolling on Twitter, as I want to do, by kind of mocking the position that it's easy to make the shot, just to see what people would say. I often do that on Twitter because it's a good way. Dialectics, remember, it's a good way of finding out the truth. Basically, by all accounts, the 200-yard shot with this 1908 rifle, which apparently had probably been souped up in some way, that maybe had a modern scope on it, maybe it'd been modified. The shot, according to Larry Johnson, even somebody who'd never touched a gun before with a scope from 200 yards, after about half an hour's training, could probably make that shot, according to Larry Johnson. So, yeah, I mean, and I've seen somebody assemble it in 50 seconds. So the shot is doable from where he was. Also, if you bear in mind, he probably wasn't aiming for the neck. He was probably aiming for the head. I mean, if I was trying to take someone out, would you aim for their neck? I would aim for their head, right? So, it's possible that he may have missed the shot, is what I'm saying. And that's why Charlie was hit in the neck. And remember, I'm trying to steel man the FBI position here as much as I can, in the name of balance, because there's so much. I mean, that Ian Carroll guy has got hundreds of thousands of views on his video. And what I'm trying to do is, you know, be as logical as possible, and also give the FBI the benefit of the doubt in terms of the evidence. The best bit that Ian Carroll has, the most convincing point, less about the screwdriver, less about the whole business of how did he get on the roof, how did he get off the roof, you know, is this black blob a gun, blah, 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 all of that stuff, whatever. The most convincing point Ian Carroll makes is, why did the FBI not share the actual footage of the shooting? Why did they choose to clip out the actual shooting? Now, there could be a legal reason for that. Robinson has not actually been tried yet. Maybe they're going to play this footage in court. Maybe it's the smoking gun in the you know, they still have to make the case and try this guy. Let's not forget. So maybe there's a kind of legal law enforcement reason why they haven't shown that crucial footage to the public. Maybe they had a reason because it's absolutely incriminating, for example. I don't know. I'm not a legal expert, even less a legal expert, but I am a gun expert, friends. Okay? But, I mean, maybe you can tell me. They may have a reason, the FBI, for not sharing that 3 seconds of footage of the actual shooting itself. Okay, so another huge debate, and Ian Carroll gets into this as well, is whether the wound that you see on Charlie Kirk, which is in his neck there, was an entry wound or was an exit wound, i.e. was the bullet going in that way, or was Charlie Kirk hit from behind in the back, and what you see there is an exit wound. Okay, now I've seen so much stuff, so much debate on this topic, and I have to say that I've been broadly convinced by those people arguing that Charlie Kirk was shot from the front and not from the back, exactly as the FBI said. Why do I say this? Well, for one, the kind of amount of blood and the neatness of the wound and so on is consistent with it being an entry wound and not an exit wound. Larry Johnston, who is by no means someone who's afraid of conspiracies, right, has this as his line. He insists that he was hit from the front. He makes a big deal of the recoil, which way Charlie Kirk actually moves at the point of impact. Now, I'm not going to play any of the clips, right? But he says that if you hit backwards, right, if you hit there, you're going to be real backwards, okay? And if you hit there, you're going to be jolted forwards, okay? And I mean, as far as I can tell, there's no actual reason to think that he was hit from behind rather than in front. Now, a lot of the arguments that he was hit from behind come from people studying the wound and arguing like it couldn't be that way if it was a entry wound, right? I.e. it has to be an exit wound. Also, the lack of an obvious exit wound otherwise, right? All of these things. But a lot of it comes from this kind of something they call like something cracking it, like acoustic analysis, crack bang analysis or something. I can't even remember what it's called now, but people like studying the acoustics and saying, well, if you really look at these acoustics, clearly the bullet's coming from over there. And also, like, why did his top come up like that, etc., etc. I mean, the thing is, had anybody heard of this acoustic technology before today? Like, I mean, how is anybody meant to make anything of that, right? As far as I can tell, the most likely scenario is the one that Larry Johnston outlined, that it's an entry wound or an exit wound. The other theory I saw, there's this guy who says that Charlie Kirk was wearing an earpiece and that the bullet came and it kind of, like, the earpiece was rucked in some way and that kind of made his shirt go up. It's very elaborate. A lot of other people have said, well, it hit him in the vest and it hit the vest and then it bounced up in some way. I mean, you know, why can't it just be an entry? I mean, I guess the real question is, why can't it just be he was shot in the neck? Why can't that be the story? And that does bring us to perhaps the biggest question mark, which is the question of Charlie Kirk's magic bones. I've got it here, point 3, right? Charlie Kirk's magic bones. And this was another thing that Ian Carroll talked about a lot. The absence of an autopsy report. Why haven't they released an autopsy report? Apparently, this is up to the Kirk family. It's up to Erica Kirk as to whether she wants to release the autopsy of Charlie Kirk. And so all we've got is this surgeon saying, basically, that it's a miracle that Charlie Kirk's body stopped the bullet. I.e. they found the bullet in Charlie Kirk. It didn't come out, and that explained why there was not an exit wound. And that has sent the internet into a frenzy. And I have to say, that's a good point. Okay? So if you're following, Ian Carroll has made two good points so far. First good point is, why did the FBI not show us that 3 seconds of footage? Good question. Maybe it has a rational answer. I don't know. Second good point is, what's with the magic bones? That is genuinely a head scratcher. If they're asking us to believe in miracles, you're going to have to be, you know, a lot of people aren't going to believe in miracles in 2025. I'll just say that. Maybe evangelical Christians will, and maybe that's the point. I don't know. Maybe they'll fall for any old shit. But the magic bones, Man of Steel, weird, very weird. So that's one that could be answered maybe with an autopsy report. Because a lot of people say, like, that gun, that Mauser, even if it was modified, is the sort of thing which would shoot through. I mean, I've seen the demonstration of it shooting through breeze blocks. I've seen other people say, like, if you shot an elk or something like that, it would go straight through the elk and kill another elk, maybe the other side, because it would go straight through. And this is what the surgeon was saying, that, you know, he'd expect this bullet to go straight through and kill somebody else behind. And the reason that has got a lot of people speculating is, well, maybe it wasn't done with a Mauser. Maybe it was a different bullet. Maybe it was something else, right? One explanation, and again, it's Larry Johnson who came up with this. He said, well, look, there are some bullets that are designed to stay lodged, right? And it's possible that Tyler Robinson modified, like, got these special bullets that are designed to stay in. Why he'd bother to do that, I don't know. But it's in the realm of possibility. So, you know, Larry Johnson seems to know an awful lot about ballistics and guns. And, you know, I've seen dozens upon dozens upon dozens of these people in the past couple of days. And to me, he just seemed to know what he was on about most. So, there we go. You have to make a judgment call, all other things being equal. So what else do we have? What else do we have? Okay, so I would say that the Man of Steel magic bones is the weirdest part of this story so far. So what was point four? Okay. Now, Candice Owens has made an awfully big deal about Tyler Robinson changing clothes and visiting Dairy Queen at 6:38 on that same day, about 4 or 5 hours after the murder took place.
...p.m. at a nearby Dairy Queen. Here is that photo that we can show you. Just take a look at this photo. What is wrong with this picture? A lot is wrong with this picture. First and foremost, 6:38 p.m., you just shot someone. You have gone through great pains to hide your face, to change your outfit. But wait, you didn't fully change your outfit, did you? I'm looking at this photo, and you're wearing jeans and you're wearing the maroon shirt. Now we have a 50-50 combo of the outfit, and now you're showing your eyes and you're not fearful at all that you might be recognized. Also, wow, you must have quite the stomach. You don't have a record. Next thing you know, you shoot someone and you're like, I'm just going to go have a meal. You don't seem to be too shaken or too upset. Something problematic is the location, by the way. We mapped this out. It's about 15 minutes away from the campus at a time when we're told that he's idling by babysitting the rifle. So you can see, we're showing you, it's about 17-minute drive away from the campus. So is there, there should be a lot of footage then of this Dodge.
And she produced a photo of Tyler Robinson apparently at Dairy Queen with a Superman poster behind him. And also a poster for, and I, it took me hours to find this, but I did find it. A sign. It's one of those digital screens, right? That Dairy Queen. There's two digital screens because people have gone down there and taken photos of it. There are two digital screens. The Superman poster is in the middle. And then on the left digital screen is an advertisement for a maple cookie shake, which is a brand new shake that was released on the 29th of August. So this photo of Tyler Robinson has to have been taken after the 29th of August. Okay. Now, people have gone down there and that Superman poster is gone. In fact, a reporter, an independent freelance journalist, went down there after Candice Owens released this picture. And the Superman poster was gone. They said, oh, well, we removed it a few days ago. So this picture struck me as a little bit unusual. Why is this picture unusual, friends? Well, there's two reasons. One, I found this chap here pointing out that the timestamp has been blurred out. It's been deliberately removed. The second unusual thing about this picture is that Candice Owens is the sole source. No mainstream media source, as far as I'm aware, apart from Newsweek, right? Newsweek did run a story on this, but none of the newspapers, none of the mainstream media, BBC, Sky, Times, New York Times, etc., etc., none of the newspapers of record, none of the big mainstream CNN, etc., ran a story on the Dairy Queen photo. Didn't touch it. The FBI, as far as I'm aware, have not acknowledged the Dairy Queen photo. And yet, the Dairy Queen photo is the centrepiece of the Candice Owens conspiracy. Candice Owens has made a very, very big deal about Tyler Robinson changing clothes and going to this Dairy Queen at 6:38. She makes a huge deal out of it. And yet, she is the sole source for it. Now this got my spidey senses tingling, friends, because there's all sorts of dodginess when it comes to this. One, on the FBI website, it says that there should be a $100,000 reward for anyone with any information about Charlie Kirk assassination. Did Candice Owens submit her Dairy Queen photo to the FBI in exchange for $100,000? And if not, why not? That's a question. Did the FBI go down to Dairy Queen and try to obtain receipts for 6:38 that day? Because presumably there'd be a record of Tyler Robinson buying something there. Don't know. What I do know is that Candice Owens' stuff on Dairy Queen photo is hermetically sealed within the universe of Candice Owens. She is the sole source for it, and it's the centerpiece of her thing. And I've noticed this about Candice Owens. She likes to originate something and then keep it kind of sealed within her universe. Right? I mean, I remember when she did the thing with Nick Fuentes, she put it behind the paywall, so you had to like be in her thing. Right? And she's always, oh, I've got some information, I'm going to release it as an exclusive later on. You know, it's coming type thing. This, friends, has all the hallmarks of carny bullshit from Candice Owens, I'm afraid. And honestly, of all the videos I watched, and I watched maybe 100 videos for this, okay? Candice Owens was the worst of all. She was appalling, okay? Just the leaps, the total disconnected leaps of faith that she made. Her kind of, I don't know, just the way her mind works is not logical in any way that I would recognize. And this Dairy Queen thing, unless it's verified by the FBI or by mainstream media or by any other source, could just be made up. Right? I'm not saying it's been doctored. I'm saying maybe she was tricked. Maybe somebody from Dairy Queen said, oh, Tyler Robinson was here a couple of days ago. Here's a photo of him. Right? And she's changed the time or something. Whatever it is, whether it's honest or dishonest, something's up with the Dairy Queen bit, which is why nobody else has touched it. And yet, the Dairy Queen detail makes its way into what I'd call the conspiracy ecosystem. It kind of makes its way. So Ian Carroll, for example, imports the Dairy Queen detail and the change in the clone clothes detail into his timeline, right? There's a problem there, I would say, because at this point, the FBI timeline and the Candace Owens timeline diverge. In the FBI story, Tyler Robinson jumps off the roof with his gun, off into the woods, and then he stays in that woods, texting his Troon girlfriend at some point, and then he goes and then he goes to visit a pastor or to visit his dad or something, and then they turn him in. Okay, some version of that. Whereas in the Candace Owens, Ian Carroll timeline, he does the deed, then he kind of goes into town, picks himself up a Dairy Queen, has an ice cream, you know, and then he goes to the pastor and turns himself. I don't know. So there's a difference in the FBI timeline and the Candace Owens timeline. And as far as I can see, there's absolutely no reason to believe that shot from Dairy Queen was taken on that day. It could have been taken any time between the 29th of August and the day that Charlie Kirk was killed. Right? There's no proof that picture is from that time. Now, she's very specific about the time, 6:38, and yet the timestamp is blurred. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know. What I do know is that if we found out at some later date that Candace Owens is literally a federally employed disinformation agent polluting the discourse with crap, I wouldn't be surprised. And even Larry Johnson, okay, who is definitely entertaining conspiracy on this, okay, but even Larry Johnson, when that was brought up to him, said, like, look, why are you making such a big deal about this, right? He didn't, and he also said that, what did he say? He said something's off about the way in which bad info is being put into the mix. He said that about the idea of Charlie Kirk being hit from behind. And what he was saying, as a former spook himself, is that it's actually the disinformation entering the system that points to the FBI being involved rather than the inconsistencies. It's actually the abundance of crap conspiracies that get his spidey senses up, which is weird, which is an interesting kind of different way of thinking about it, i.e. could this stuff be entering the discourse in order to get people, you know, in order to turn it into some sort of fuckfest. I don't know, right? But if any part of this turns out to be absolute horseshit, this Dairy Queen photo, it's got a lot of question marks over it. That's all I'll say, okay? Fifth thing that people focus on is a character called George Zinn, the decoy, who is an elderly Jewish gentleman who happened to witness 9/11 and who also happened to call in a bomb hoax or something back in the day, if I remember that correctly. And if you remember, when it happened, he caused a kerfuffle and the police arrested him. And then afterward, he said, oh, I acted on instinct. And that got a lot of people saying, well, that's a very weird thing to do. That's true. It is a very weird thing for George Zinn to do. And certainly it's a question. I don't think it's a smoking gun bit of evidence, though. Right? It's not a smoking gun bit of evidence. It's just a bit weird. Right? This guy, George Zinn, just a bit of a weird... Like, that's a weird instinct to have. It's a weird thing to do. It's not what I would do. It's not what you would do. Right? Who knows? Who knows? So, there's a question over the decoy, I would say. But it's also... It's again one of those things where you could say, well, yeah, maybe this guy is like a 50-year, 60-year even, hard-left, far-left agitator, you know, activist, something like that. The other angle is that he was, you know, working with Tyler Robinson in one way, or he was part of a larger conspiracy, or that he's some sort of spy, right? Those are the other possibilities, but... The thing is, if we're giving the benefit of the doubt to the FBI, if we're giving the benefit of the doubt to the narrative, it's not so convincing that you could say, well, yeah, this is definitely proof of a conspiracy. It's not definitely proof, is it? Okay. There is a question mark over George Zinn, though, and I do admit that it's a bit weird. Okay. Sixth thing. Again, this is a Candice Owens one, right? But just because of that, we shouldn't definitely... There's this man from TPUSA who Candice Owens actually knows fiddling about with the camera behind. He actually removes it. And you can see footage of him removing the camera. Who is that guy? What is the footage on that camera? Has he turned it into the FBI? All of these are kind of open questions. I would say, yeah, that is weird. Why did he remove that camera? Especially, you know, just after this has happened. This surely is a very important bit of evidence. And yet there he is tampering with it. Like, why didn't the FBI immediately arrest him and ask him, like, what the hell are you doing, mate? Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Again, like George Zinn, not a smoking gun. But it's certainly like, what the hell's going on here, right? But it's not actually evidence of anything, right? It could just be that he was doing his job, or that he acted like, or somebody told him, look, you need to go and get that camera for us. We need to review that tape. I don't know. We don't know anything about this guy or what he was up to. So, yeah, that is weird. I would agree. What else have we got here? There's number... Okay, so moving on now to Tyler Robinson's texts with his Troon girlfriend. The Troon girlfriend. Boyfriend, whatever. Transitioning, I don't know. Zia, they, or whatever. And a lot of people have made a lot of... and this was certainly my reaction as well. What on earth are these texts? They don't sound like they were written... by two Zoomers. They don't sound like they were written by a 22-year-old guy who's a leftist, Antifa, permanently online guy with a Troon girlfriend who literally dresses as like a little bunny or something. Doesn't sound like the sort of language. Now, how do we explain this? If we're giving the FBI the benefit of the doubt, how do we explain it? Also, it was pointed out there were no timestamps. Right, in the what the FBI released, there was no timestamps of the texts. Right, so they weren't actual texts they released. They released a transcript of the texts. How could this be explained? Well, some people have suggested that it was AI written because of the antiquated or weird use of language. Another explanation is that simply some FBI officer was transcribing them and just used their policey language rather than the actual language, i.e. they translated Zoomer speak into FBI speak, right? Or they approximated what was said, right? And then they reproduced it in their own cop language. Things like calling it a vehicle, or, you know, sweeping the area, or, you know, all of the other jargon that was police jargon that was used in those texts. So you could say, well, yeah, this was not actually what was said between them. This was a police transcription or approximation of them, you know, which was clumsily or quickly done and put out by Cash Patel. Another possibility, and this has been proffered by a lot of people on the MAGA side, is that Tyler Robinson himself came up with this as a way to get the Troon off the hook, i.e. give a full confession of what happened in order to make sure that the Troon wasn't done for being an accessory to murder or anything like that, okay? Because it does conveniently get the Troon off the hook. Now, and then you could say, well, maybe that happened, and also the FBI transcribed it in cop speak. There's another possibility, actually, that was provided by Ian Carroll himself, by our conspiracy theorist in chief, who points out in one of his recent videos that Tyler Robinson's backstory is very interesting, that this university in Utah, the one with Charlie Kirk was shot at, I believe, the Utah Valley. I think there's two different universities in Utah, but Tyler Robinson was enrolled to go to this place in Utah, which has deep ties with the CIA and is used as a CIA recruiting grounds, okay, for training special agents and so on, okay? And Tyler Robinson had a 4.0 grade point average, right? A 4.0 GPA, grade point average, which means he was a top student. It means he was top of the class, a top 1% student, right, who enrolled in this program that is known for recruiting spooks and then dropped out after a month. The story is that he was somehow, you know, became very left-wing and became radicalized against the likes of Charlie Kirk for transphobia due to comments made about his Troon girlfriend. Whether you believe that or not, I don't know. But the point is that Tyler Robinson was not any normal Zoomer, was he? Wasn't just a normal 22-year-old. He was the sort of 22-year-old who had a 4.0 grade average, who went to specifically enrolled on a course that could have put him in the pipeline to be a CIA agent. He's also, if the story is to be believed, the sort of 22-year-old who knows a little bit about guns, who knows enough about guns to maybe modify this 1908 Mauser, to know what sort of scope to get to plan this whole deal. And if the backstory, and this is where I thought I spotted a possible contradiction in Ian Carroll's narrative, right? If this story about Tyler Robinson is true, i.e. that he's this exceptional student who was bright enough, possibly, to go on to be recruited by the CIA, by that same rationale, maybe Tyler Robinson was bright enough to know the police lingo, to know the exact sorts of things to put in that text, right? I.e. the weird and antiquated language could come from Tyler Robinson himself not being a normal 22-year-old. I'm just putting that out there, okay? Remember, what we're trying to do in this video is steel man the FBI's position. So in this alternative theory, the text, the weird texts, are actually from Tyler Robinson himself being a pretty weird 22-year-old. I mean, let's face it. If you're a 22-year-old with a 4.0 grade average who's just dropped out of this elite course that is known for recruiting CIA agents, and instead you use your skills to go and kill Charlie Kirk in the biggest political assassination since JFK or since Martin Luther King, right? If you're that sort of individual, you're not normal. So that's another possibility. Which brings me on to the next bit, which is Tyler then went and talked to this youth pastor. A little bit of the story that is not focused on that much, but you went to talk to this pastor who then told his dad, or his dad told the pastor in confession. I can't remember exactly what happened. And then they turned him in, right? They turned Tyler Robinson in. And, it, you know, the text mentions specifically that Tyler Robinson's dad is a hardcore MAGA, that he's a conservative. You know, possibly they're from a Mormon background. I'm not sure about that. And clearly, if Tyler was still known to the pastor, this, you know, he'd gone to he'd gone to this kind of youth congregation when he was growing up and was still known there. So he's actually like from a conservative Christian background. He just turned to Antifa or Trantifa. This is the official story. Is it believable that the pastor and the MAGA dad would turn him in? Yes, it is. It is believable. Is it believable that Tyler would be radicalized against MAGA? I mean, to me, I mean, for me, it's a little bit convenient, right? It's almost like Hollywood perfect, this narrative, for, you know, the narrative that MAGA want to tell about America. It's almost too perfect. But still, we've seen kind of left-wing extremism like this before. I mean, my main question over that is, like, where have Antifa been since 2020? Like, you're almost like Antifa itself seems antiquated to me. Like, they've been, like, hiding out. They decided to take 4 years off and now they're back. 5 years off and now they're back. So I do find it convenient that this is the story. But again, is it believable? It's stretching credulity, I have to say, right? It's stretching credulity. I have question marks about how perfect it seems from the MAGA point of view. It's like, if you were going to have the absolutely perfect storyline to sell to MAGA, this is the one, right? But it is also believable that the dad would turn him in, and that the pastor would turn him in, and that he'd go to the pastor, and that somebody from that sort of background, especially a 4.0 GPA student, tipped or earmarked to go into something like special services, somebody who's so bright, top 1% sort of student, would do the prep work and have the knowledge of the scope and the gun and what, you know, to what to say and what to do, and could he say these things in the text? Right, we're not dealing with any typical blue hair here. We're dealing with an elite student. This is what the FBI have given us. So maybe it's true. I mean, it seems too ridiculous to be true, right? It seems too incredible to be true. You couldn't make it up. But sometimes it's like that. So I've still got question marks. I still think it's narratively too perfect, right? But giving the FBI the benefit of the doubt, could this be real? Hey. And now we get to the 10th point, which is something else that Candace Owens made a big song and dance about, which is that in this town in Utah, where this took place, almost everybody who's interviewed by the mainstream media was called Steele. There was a man called Irwin Steele who actually provided the footage, the security footage, the home security footage of Tyler Robinson before the shooting took place, right? He was spotted in the neighborhood mooching about, right? And interviewed was Irwin Steele. And this very much interested Candace Owens, who said, who is this man Irwin Steele? And she was interested to find out that Irwin Steele doesn't actually live in that house, and actually down that street owns several of the houses with another chap called, I think it's Pat Steele, right? Pat Steele, I think it was. Don't quote me on that, but something else Steele, right? I think it was Patrick. And she was like, this is weird. Why do all these people called Steele live in this town? And then she showed a clip of a family talking where there was a little girl, and the little girl was called Ellie Steele. And she also showed a BBC article where a woman was talked to, and she was called Stacy Steele or Shelley Steele or something like that. Somebody else called Steele. So she was like, this is weird. How come all these people are called Steele? And then she looked into them, and this guy, Irwin Steele, works for a valve engineering company. And she says, like, in her history of looking into conspiracy rabbit holes, you know, valve engineering keeps on coming up, blah, blah, blah. But I looked into why there are so many Steels in this town in Utah. And apparently Steele is a very popular Mormon name. This is a very Mormon town. And that in that town in particular, there's tons of people called Steele who all come from the same family, this family here. And this is kind of well known. So actually, even though it seems weird that there are all these people called Steele, for that town, it's not that weird. They're a very well-known family, as Candice Owens mentioned, who are actually involved in local politics and conservative politics and things like that, you know, as a prominent family would be. And that is one of the reasons why all these people who are in the interviews are called Steele. To me, this is typical of the sort of non-point that Candice Owens makes. It's like, well, all right, that's interesting. So what? So what? Just means nothing. Okay, yeah, there are lots of people called Steele in this town. Means nothing. Thanks, Candice. You've wasted another half an hour of my time looking into this rabbit hole of people called Steele in fucking Utah. Okay? So anyway, next point. We're getting on to now the Israel part of this. Now, the main person, I would say, who articulates this view is Max Blumenthal. And maybe in post-production I'll put in a few like clips here and there of these people. Here's Max Blumenthal laying out the argument, and then I'll come back and tell you what I think.
But Netanyahu immediately weighed in with prayers about Charlie Kirk just minutes after he was killed. It was eerie. His body was still warm, and Netanyahu was beginning to claim Charlie Kirk's legacy. I've been writing about Charlie Kirk for 10 years now. He was not just one of the most important conservative youth activists. He was also one of the most critical Gentile assets that the self-proclaimed Jewish state controlled inside the United States. And he had started to move away from the Israeli line, and specifically Netanyahu's line, and even entertain the possibility of publicly calling for Netanyahu to resign, because he privately despised Netanyahu in the months before his death. He was under enormous pressure from Zionist activists who are close to Netanyahu, basically Netanyahu's cutouts and the millionaires and billionaires that Netanyahu presides over inside the United States. He was under enormous pressure to kind of fall back, to stop providing a platform to Israel critics at his TPUSA events like Tucker Carlson or Marjorie Taylor Greene.
So Blumenthal, I mean, I have to say he lays out, like, rhetorically and logically, he lays out a good case. You know, Charlie Kirk, was he turning on Israel? Was, you know, the conversations with the donors, the structural importance of TPUSA, the desperation of the Zionists who are losing the younger generation, who are losing, they've lost the Democrats, they're in the process of losing the Republicans, so they've got motive to do all of this. And now they've used the tragedy to exploit it for their own political end, get everybody back on the reservation. It seems to have worked. Now, I have to say, of all of them, all of this is like convincing, but you can also make arguments the other way, right? You can make arguments the other way. You can say, well, and I saw Ryan Dawson doing this. I saw Nick Fuentes doing this, and various other people saying, well, was Charlie Kirk really turning on Israel? Or was he doing like a kind of limited hangout because he saw the pushback he was getting from his own audience? And Charlie Kirk actually was not a very... he wanted to be liked. He was a people pleaser, right? He wasn't a kind of confrontational individual, even though he was known for debating, right? He actually, especially on the conservative side, he wanted to be liked, he wanted to please the people around him, he wanted to stay on good terms with Tucker Carlson, who was still on good terms with TPUSA, is still going on tour, he was there at the Charlie Kirk Memorial. So that explains why he started saying these sort of things, because he wanted to maintain audience share as against somebody like Nick Fuentes or Candice Owens or Tucker Carlson. And also he wanted to stay on good terms with Tucker Carlson and Candice Owens, etc., etc., okay? Which then brought him into conflict with his donors, but then, because he's a people pleaser, wants to avoid confrontation, actually, like, was quite compliant and actually then started to try to modify his message back to being more pro-Israel, you know, especially because he doesn't want to lose, you know, the big money. And that, so that narrative also strikes me as being true. There's probably just like six of one, half a dozen of the other. Did Israel have motive to do this? Now, you could say yes. They've definitely got motive. They've definitely got motive as per the Max Blumenthal idea. There are also other kind of more kind of brutal versions of it. It's like the mafia. He turned against the family and he needed to be taught a lesson. Nobody takes sides against the family, right? Something like this. And again, narratively, it makes sense, right? But has it played out that way? Has it gone that way? I mean, it had, literally, all anybody's talking about is Israel did it, right? And Netanyahu has come out and denied it several times. If you ask me, appalling strategy. Machiavelli would say, don't do that. He'd say, stay silent, right? So I would say poor political strategy by Netanyahu to come out and deny it, right? To get people speculating even more. Maybe Netanyahu knows that and he's doing it deliberately as a flex. I don't know, right? But the point is, there's nothing conclusive there. Let's just pretend, okay? And I've spent the video trying to steelman the FBI position, but let's pretend the Ian Carroll version of events, right, is true. The Ian Carroll version of events is that you know, something's up with it. He didn't have the gun, he had help, George Zinn did the decoy for him, he was shot, Charlie was shot from the back of the neck by a second gunman on a second roof from behind. This dodgy TPUSA guy was working for the same conspiracy. There's this conspiracy in broad daylight. All of these people carry out this killing. Does it point to Israel? What done it? It still doesn't. You can say, well, George Zinn, he was Jewish, right? But George Zinn, as far as I can tell, it was a kind of radical leftist. He wasn't like a hardcore Zionist or something. Unless I'm mistaken on that. So, I mean, it's still not like kind of, it doesn't, even if you take the Ian Carroll line, it still doesn't say, oh, well, definitely it was Israel what done it. So, tall and short of it is, we've gone through all of the different, 13 different aspects of the conspiracy narrative, many, many different questions, some questions unanswered, and the tall or short of it is, it still doesn't amount to a whole hill of beans. Most aspects of the conspiracy theory can be explained away or have an equal and opposite expert telling you something in the opposite direction, especially on the logistics side. All of that stuff I've seen, like, well, you know, judging the two narratives side by side, there's nothing really to say it didn't go down the way the FBI said. Most important points, the lack of the footage, like I said, the magic, the Man of Steel magic bullet thing, that's weird. The text, I put less. I think the text can be explained away if the FBI just came out and said, look, it was an officer that wrote this, okay, that's why the weird language. Or Tyler Robinson's just a weird spurg. He's a weird, autistic, 4.0 grade point average type guy with a troon boyfriend. You know, so maybe he's the sort of person who'd write like this. I don't know. So I don't put too much on the text, but the footage, the magic bones, that's pretty much all that's there. When you peel it all away, it's pretty much all that's there. The decoy, it's weird. But really, we're not getting, like, I'm not, after, honestly, I was expecting to come out of watching all of this stuff with a firmer kind of position of, yeah, definitely, it was Israel what done it. Definitely the FBI aren't telling the truth, right? I was expecting to watch all of that stuff and come out more convinced. Actually, I watched it all and I've come out really... well, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with any of these positions. What I've come out thinking is there's just not a lot there. There's not a lot there to corroborate the notion that the FBI are just lying to your face, or to corroborate the notion that Israel done it. Israel have motive, but you can also argue it the other way. Right, you can also argue it the other way, i.e., they would have wanted to keep Charlie alive, right? To do the limited hangout, to keep people on the reservation, to steer them in various different ways. You know, there's a way of arguing it both ways. And this is the problem, right? There are too many. If we went through those 13 points, almost every single point on its own merits, in isolation, can be argued both ways. There's nothing, there's no real smoking guns. Even the missing footage could be explained away by, oh, the FBI need to show this in court. The only question mark is over the magic bullet. That's really the tall and short of it. I've taken over an hour and 12 minutes to say, really, there's not a lot there. And I say that after watching hours upon dozens of hours of this stuff. It's not a lot. It's just a lot of speculation. It's why I don't do the conspiracy stuff. It drives me up the wall. It drives me up the absolute wall. Never again. Remind me. If anything like this happens again, say, hey, last time you did this, you drove yourself mad watching this, watching Candice Owens for 12 fucking hours. Yeah. The biggest takeaway you can take from this video is, if anybody is muddying the waters in this whole conversation, it's Candice Owens, right? Ian Carroll, right, to give him his due, seems to be autistically going through stuff, right? Or somebody like Larry Johnson, they seem to be taking this seriously. They seem to be trying to, like, come to conclusions on their own merits, right? Candice, to me, seems to be lobbing turds into the mix. Lobbying crap into the mix and polluting the discourse with that. So yeah, you can draw your own conclusions. I just wanted to share with you my thoughts after doing all of this, and hopefully I'll never have to talk about it ever again. All right, pick up a course at the Academic Agency, promo code Shredder, and I'll see you tomorrow. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.